Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Again, welcome everyone to another one of our podcasts with Mr. Former World Number One Ivan Lendl, former World Number One Boris Becker, former World Number One from the city, John McEnroe.
The former World Number One, Mats Wilander.
Mats Wilander,
exactly. This is one time when I don't mind being the worst player in this room. I'll take that. That's no problem. Today we're going to try and be as mean as you possibly can be without being mean that lasts.
How do you do that?
I'm going to show you. So we're going to start off by, because John was there, I'm going to start off by asking you, Ivan. In 86 or 87, we played an exhibition in Barcelona.
Yes.
I had arrived from New York City. I had just met my wife. I checked my rackets and my clothes and my everything in. I didn't have anything.
First mistake.
That was a rookie mistake. And we played, and I didn't have a racket, and we started playing, and you were kicking my butt so badly. Six love, one love, two love, four love to you. Game point for me. I certain came in. I thought you're going to chip one so I can win the game. No. Five love, six love, six love.
Let me pretend to be Ivan. What's your question?
My question is, what was your mindset? Why did you think what were the benefits for you trying to beat me 6-love, 6-love? Were you on a roll?
So it goes to the week before. When I was in Hamburg, my first clay court tournament, and I was playing terrible. I was playing so bad. I was playing in the quarters. I was playing Terry Toulan, and it was heavy and slow and rebouet. And he was beating me, was serving for the match at 5-4 in the second and 6-5 in the second, and somehow I won. The next day I'm playing Kent Carlsen of Sweden.
Tough.
And same thing, he just runs and runs and runs, and he's leading 6-3, 5-3. And I can't put four balls in the court in the row. And somehow
answer the question.
Well, just learn some patience, John. It helps you. So I was really struggling with my game. Next day in the finals, I'm going to play Mathieu, your buddy. And I'm going to get killed.
That's what you thought?
That's what I thought, because I literally couldn't hit a winner, couldn't hit three balls in a row. And somehow I woke up and played great, won 1-1 and 3. That's Sunday. Then I fly to Barcelona, and you and I play on Monday. And as all the players, you're never certain when it's there, and I was afraid it's going to leave me. So I played as hard as I could.
Yes.
And I had
yes.
no idea that you didn't have your rackets.
Right.
And all that. And so I just wanted to keep that form going into the French. But I had the same experience with John, which John doesn't know. We played in Hong Kong 1 year, and I lost my rackets. And I went into a store and bought three Adidas rackets, strung them with something they had, and John beat me 7-5 in the fifth in an exhibition.
Well, here's the difference, though.
Yes.
You see, I was up 6-3, 6-3, 5-3. And someone
you just
came
couldn't
up,
close some, it?
Someone came on the court and they said, did you know that Ivan lost his rackets and didn't, you know, he just had to get some rackets in a store? I go, no, you got to be kidding. So I decided to throw the third and fourth sets bars in order to make the people, the Hong Kong fans, happy.
I appreciate it, but obviously you had a better agent than I did, because my agent didn't come on the court and tell me Mats didn't have his rackets.
So the next morning I get a phone call from you.
Wait, let me just finish, okay?
Yes.
Just ask one other question about this. Let's say that you didn't know he didn't have his rackets, okay? Let's say he had his rackets, and it's 6-0, 4-0. In an exhibition, and it's game point for him. The question is, why didn't you give him a game there?
Because he could come back. That's the problem.
Who's the guy that said you can't be serious?
That is a possibility. That's a possibility.
But Mats anyway. Wouldn't do that, though. You know, if he knew that,
no, I wouldn't do that.
None
well,
of us would
I
do
it. Now I know it. Okay.
Now you know.
You didn't know that back then. No, I would have sensed that you gave me a game. But anyway, to end the story, the following day you call me and you ask me if I want to practice. I said, I don't have any rackets. I don't want to practice. Because it's not my rackets. Right. And I lost to him 7-5 in the third, I think.
Oh, I so wonder. See, 7-5 in the third. Now, of course, he was a much better clay court player than I was. Yeah. But see, you know, you got to be, you know, keep
John,
this
is that
thing
your
going.
Best win on clay?
It's one of my best wins. I did, believe it or not, beat you in the juniors. And do you remember the match of the French juniors we played?
6-2, 7-6.
I think possibly you could say you, I won the battle and you won the war since you beat me in the French Open final two other times.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if you can win the battle and lose the war, but I was not happy losing.
Well, I don't think any of us were.
Tell me, you two.
I have a story. What, on clay?
Oh, no. I just want to know.
We didn't play on clay.
On clay, no. But when you guys went to play on clay, obviously it came very natural to us. I'm sure it came natural to you to play on clay because you kind of grew up on clay.
Me too.
Yeah, you grew up on clay.
I grew up on clay.
What? How stubborn were the two of you to try and play clay court tennis from the back, and now do you possibly regret not coming forwards more, or did you play the way you want to play? Like we serve volley on grass, and now
well,
I'm thinking I was stupid.
You may not believe this, Mats, but when I was in the juniors, the only tournaments I won in juniors were clay court events. The 16 and 18 under clay courts, the Orange Ball, the Banana Ball, and the French Open juniors were the only tournaments I ever went. All five of them were on clay. So I actually thought of myself as a clay court player. And then
with the same style? I mean, you chip and in and serve?
I think I was a little more of a pusher then. Okay. You know, I didn't attack as much. I was just, you know, trying to get the ball back, the war of attrition. You know, I played a guy once. This isn't related to this. But in the 12 and unders, I played a match in the national clay courts. And the guy came out and he moonballed every ball. And there's nothing you can do at that age. Yeah. You know, you don't serve big enough. You can't get to the net. So the first set, it was 6-3. You know how long it took?
An hour.
3 hours.
No. One set.
3 hours. And then he, luckily.
Did you win that set?
I won 6-3.
Three hours.
I hated every minute of it. But, like, I figured he hated it more.
Yeah.
So, and then he changed his tactics, and I beat him 6-2 in 20 minutes. Now you go to 77, which is the last year that I had this run on clay courts. After that, the U.S. Open, the hard courts, all these summer events changed the hard courts. And then I went to Stanford, and that's where they played on a much faster hard court. So all of a sudden, sort of my eyes lit up. Hey, wait a minute. I like to be aggressive and attack. That is the style I prefer playing. And now all of a sudden, they've got a situation where the courts are becoming faster. You know, Mats, from Stockholm, the first time, I don't know what the year, Yvonne, you played Stockholm,
yes,
right?
Yes, I did a couple of times.
The first year I played there in 1978, I played, I think your idol, Bjorn Borg, or
yes,
a lot of people.
Yes, you did, yeah, it was fast, really
tile,
fast.
They played on tile then. I was like,
quick.
This is crazy. Can we please play all events on this? But so the courts were fast, so I adjusted my game and changed my game, which made it more difficult for me to be able to do it as easily on clay.
Yes.
Boris, your turn. I'm sorry.
No,
I'm taking your time.
Yeah. I was born and raised on clay in Germany, and because of the winter, we played on carpet indoors. So I played on clay on carpet. You couldn't get more different.
Very close
surfaces.
In speeds, those two.
Yeah, very, very close. And so I started winning on clay, actually, in the juniors. Everything under 16, I was in the Orange Bowl final. Mm-hmm. Didn't win it, but I was very good on clay. And I felt like I played the way I wanted to play in order to win. It's just my first success came on the grass. I really don't know until now why it was on grass. Obviously, the power and the serve, but... So when I played on clay afterwards, I thought I was playing the best possible clay court tennis. It just wasn't a success because you were better on clay, and you were better on clay, and maybe a couple more guys were better on clay because of your natural style really suited against me on clay.
You see, the difference is you had indoor courts, we didn't.
Yeah.
So I didn't get messed up, but that surface, the carpet, was called Voltex. Was that invented in Sweden?
That's invented in Sweden, yes.
Well, thank you very much for that.
Yeah, I love playing on Baltex.
No kidding.
And maybe that's my that's my heritage of why I like the grass, because it felt very natural. Me too. I thought I was a you know, a slow baseliner, but I had a lot of power, but I never really came to
the net. If you hit a big surf on Baltex, can it ever come back?
Yeah, but I wasn't serving big in the juniors. That's okay. My point. I was serving kick.
What do you mean? You were 17 when you won Wimbledon.
At 15. You should have seen me when I served.
I was actually supposed to play you the year before at Wimbledon when you hurt your ankle.
Exactly, but I wasn't a big server then.
I was in 84.
In the third round, he played Bill Scanlon in the third round, and he was carried off the court, and I played the winner of that match. Yeah. I said, who is this 16-year-old at the time?
Yeah, but then I wasn't serving that big yet.
Right.
It was a three-quarter.
Pretty big to me.
Yeah, but it was. I changed my service motion. I changed my attitude, how I wanted to play on grass, and I think that made a difference. It wasn't necessarily that on clay I was stubborn and I just couldn't play better.
Right.
Are you saying you were not stubborn?
Of course, but it wasn't stubborn of I have to show them that I can play.
Well, he said we're supposed to be nasty, so I'm just asking a question.
No, fine,
I have a question for Matt. It's not nasty, but it was a question I've long wanted to ask because we're friends. In the old days, I'd hear you. I mean, obviously at 17 it made more sense, but even when you were winning and becoming one of the best players in the world and winning Grand Slams, multiple Grand Slams, I'd hear you at certain events, major events, and before the event, they would say, what do you think about your chances? And you would always say, I have no chance of winning. No chance of winning this tournament. My question is, why did you say that, knowing damn well you did have a chance to win these tournaments?
I have heard that. I have said that, too. I know Jimmy Connors got upset when I said something. I don't really care about being number one in the world. I think that I actually, not sure, did I say that at the French Open?
You said that at all the majors,
really?
Including even, I don't have it. Wait, hold on. Let's go to the videotape.
it seemed
like that you went and said that. To me, it was sort of, we all had pressure to try to figure out the ways to win it at all the events. And to me, it heaped on more pressure on the people that you were like, we have no chance. They know, turn to Yvonne or turn to me or turn to Bars. And then you sort of, we felt like, speaking for the three of us, you slid in the back door on us.
I would say that I was trying to deflect pressure for sure. I also thought that tennis was not a popularity contest, so I didn't feel any reason to have long answers in the press conference. Get out of there as quickly as possible. Don't give away anything. And why am I doing this anyway?
But isn't that
the complete opposite of what I want players to give to me today? But in my day, it was just, I think I was just trying to deflect pressure, and I really don't care.
But isn't that
kind
the problem?
Thing. I never had the confidence.
Did you believe
issue.
That you were?
I believe I could
because
win.
I think there's a responsibility to the tour, and you know, if one of your top players is saying I don't think I can win, then people are like a bit bewildered.
Yeah, but I would say that. Yeah, so I was horrendous. And I was horrendous as a
Yvonne.
Geez, what's wrong with these guys here?
No, but I didn't realize that Bars you were supposed
like this,
to be sort of good for the tour and talk positive. I was just playing tennis and I hate losing and I'm trying to improve. That's it. I didn't really see the big picture. I didn't see the necessity for the big picture.
You
mentioned where you guys were stars and that was not really.
Do you see why we were pissed at the
defensive? Unless he was on the clay court at the French Open. He's getting nasty. He's getting defensive. My question, popularity contest today. Isn't that what the young guys are doing wrong? You were absolutely right of not giving it away back in the day. That was your strategy.
Yeah.
And that's the reason some of us have underestimated. I certainly didn't. But isn't it a problem of the 20-year-olds today of saying how good and great and beautiful they are, and then they go on the court and they can't deliver? Should they be a little bit more nasty nowadays and not please everybody? Obviously, working in the media, it would backfire on some of the interviews that we all have. But isn't it smarter to really keep your cards close to your chest?
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're so sheltered today compared to when we, I mean, give me the worst thing that you guys have done because your agent might have not said. I mean, I remember we did a commercial in Japan for
you
Santo.
You really want to talk about it?
Yes, something.
That
because
was
I mean,
that
I never
was so painful.
Yes, so
that
so
was
something
so painful.
Tell me, why was so painful?
It was so painful. I'm not talking about it.
Okay.
You were dancing. We were dancing.
Is that what you call it?
I have a question then for Boris. Okay, speaking since he's all so upset, and here's another thing that me as a group of three, maybe they'll disagree. There seemed to be, and I brought it out and got ridiculed for it in a match that we played way back in 1989 in Paris. Where you seem, Yeah. You seem to have a habit of coughing, but it always seemed to happen on break point, when we were break point down. Never happened early.
Only between first and second serves.
And usually, if not always, between first and second serves, okay?
I usually stop things.
And so I decided that I was going to show how lame this was, that what you were doing and how much of it was predetermined in my book, that every time you would cough, I was going to cough. And so I started doing that, and you go, and I go, and you did that about 10 times the first 7 games. It was 4-3. You looked up to me and you said to me, "John, take it easy, man. I got a cold." And I said, "You've had it for 4 years.
Yeah.
Here's my question. Was that premeditated? Are you going to sit there and look in that camera right now and tell me that you just had a cold?
Of course it was premeditated. Of course I was looking.
How weak is that, man?
Well,
that's why my record was so bad.
My question to you guys is, do you have any idea how entertaining it was for the rest of us?
Yeah, but the point of the matter is, who won the last point of that match? And more importantly, I had to get into your head. So I was looking for ways to mastermind the situation a little bit and just to see whatever would please me, but more importantly, would upset you a little bit.
Between first and second.
Well, obviously, it's not.
Boris, don't I recall you and I playing Wimbledon semis 1 year and... on break point, you coughed between my first and second serve quite a bit.
I don't remember that.
And they gave me first serve.
Yeah. Was that gave you the first serve? You see, then it backfired. So depending on the opponent, and that's what I lack today a little bit.
That was one of the very few times I liked the umpires.
Yeah.
So nowadays I find
it a bit too much just about tennis.
It's sanitized.
Yep. It's sanitized.
Okay, so I have a question for you. Did you ever think about or feel bad or intentionally throw more sawdust on the court than was necessary to dry your grip? Because you realize that ball kids had broomsticks in those days.
I never
did. Because of you.
That's great. And I never did it intentionally
except playing John.
I played John 1 year.
Yes.
And I think it was over
right
here.
Around the net. It was all around the service line.
He's on the baseline. He's on the baseline getting ready to serve.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden he calls the ball kid over. And the ball kid has to sweep it. And then he's finally ready. So I take sawdust out of my pocket and just toss it up in the air.
So it's intentional.
Okay, I have a question.
I have a question for
Yvonne. Do you recall a match we played way back? It was an exhibition match in Barcelona. I was up 6-2, 5-0. And you were complaining the entire... By the way, the night before, I was sitting with Vince Van Patten and Andres Gomez, and we were kidding, because obviously I didn't think this was going to happen. But we said, we all decided, what score are we going to beat our opponent the next day? So I said, I'm going to beat Yvonne 6-2, 6-2, right? And so I went out there. I got up 6-2, 5-love. And during the match, you kept saying, I forgot the wrist or elbow, some you were coming up with. You said, it's all messed up. I can't play anymore. I can't play. So I said, if you can't play, just walk up. Forget it then, okay? But you continue to play. So I got a 5-0, and I decided, I said, you know something? I'm not going to absolutely throw four doubles in, but let him sort of just hit a couple good shots, get to 5-2, because he was serving, and try to break him at 5-2, which I did. But all of a sudden.
Did I win that match?
The bottom line is, that's why I'm bringing it. So you get a feel-good ending. You came back and won the match. Everyone was booing me. 2-6, 7-5, 6-0, my question is, your arm, it didn't hurt at all, right? And there was nothing wrong with the arm. That was just all a bunch of baloney, right?
I did have bad arm, but you're talking from both sides of your mouth. All of a sudden, you're saying I should have let Mats win some games, and then it backfired on you when you did that. And why should I do that to Mats?
It entertained the crowd. And then
it was entertaining.
So I was furious. Okay, I got booed off. We went straight to Antwerp, which was where they had that if you won the 3 times in 5 years, that racket or whatever it was, diamond racket.
5 times.
So we're playing there again. So the same things happened.
I remember that match.
Now it was about in those days the difference between first and second was I believe $70,000 or $75,000, which at that time in 1982 or three, I forgot what year it was. It was a pretty big deal, right? So I said, you don't me this time, okay? Because I won the first set, and he's saying, "Oh my elbow, I can't play," and this whole bunch of baloney was coming. But this time there was serious money, so I'm going. You know, I'm putting my hand out. So Yvonne says to me, I'm going to play one more game. If I lose my serve, I'm quitting, right? I broke him the next game. He did not quit, and I ended up losing the match.
You never quit, John. You never quit.
So you were just, was that gamesmanship, like Boris Coffin?
No, I had bad arm at the time. I could not hold for about 6 months the racket properly after my serve. I was going numb in the little finger and half of the ring finger, which turned to be an ulnar nerve problem. And I was very close to surgery, actually, in 82, and I decided not to do it. And I got extremely lucky. I ran in an aerobics class into a teacher, and he has helped me, gave me some exercises, and it went away. But I had really serious
elbow
problem.
Will you stop looking at him like he's telling the truth?
What was the score of the match, though, then? You won the first set.
I won 2-2.
It was 3-3. Okay. I served for the
set 35 years ago.
I served for the second. I lost it in a tiebreaker. I lost it because I knew I was doomed again. But it got better. During the match. Suddenly it got better, or I just started playing like a dumbass.
I don't know, but I remember this one of the. We talked about the zone the other day. It was one of the very few matches where I did get in the zone, and I thought I played really well the last two sets there.
Isn't that fantastic how passionate we all are still?
That's great.
After so many years, think about it. We have the shorts on now and the records, and we'd be fiery like that on the court. Isn't that something we'd like to see more nowadays? Are the rules too strict?
I had a situation. Can I ask Matt a question before I answer where the rules are? Of course the rules are too strict. In 1987 or 8, we were playing golf in Monte Carlo, and I was told by a trainer, I started working with a trainer, he said my hamstrings were too weak, okay? So he said a good way of overcoming that was to walk backwards on the golf course, okay?
Matt, wish I saw that.
In Monte Carlo, which is like
Monte
this.
Monte Carlo.
Yes.
My question to Matt is, what were you thinking when I was doing that? About me as a human being and as a tennis player when I started walking backwards on the golf course.
You know what I was thinking? Is that
he's really nuts.
The first time I saw you walk backwards was actually in Nîmes when you played an exhibition on clay. Not sure if you played there.
Beautiful.
And we had decided before we played 3 out of 5 sets, and the player that got to 2 sets first wins the next set, or if it's 2 sets to 1, you win in 4. We're not playing 5 sets. And you played a certain Henri Lecomte, and somehow he didn't get the memo. So he won the fourth set.
That can happen with
Henri. And it was 2 sets
that
all.
That can happen with Henri.
And I'm sitting in the hotel lobby, and in comes you walking backwards. And I said, like, what are you doing? Like, what are you doing?
The match must have affected John pretty badly.
Pretty badly. And he said, well, Henri just didn't realize that we were not playing 5 sets, so I quit. I walked off and I'm walking backwards. So I'm like, okay. And then we played golf. And then I realized that the first time I thought you were nuts. Now you knew I was nuts.
He
is nuts, and he is never going to be a threat again to win a slam, which
really?
I didn't think. But
oh,
that was
oh,
the case.
God.
That was the case.
What? What?
Well, you didn't win another slam.
Well, that's true.
After walking backwards, you never won
another
slam.
Did you think when I walked backwards, I was the guy's not totally gone
he's
tapioca?
Lost he's lost it for sure. Definitely.
Oh, my God. All right. It's time up. I got to go cry.
So about those rules, John.
We want to talk about the rules.
Rule okay. change. I said, yes. Wouldn't it be better if we see these, you know, young guys show their emotions a little bit, be a bit more crazy like we were. They're not even allowed to do so. So my question was, aren't the rules a bit too strict?
Daniil Medvedev,
it's cool. Wasn't he criticized, though?
Yeah.
Wasn't he criticized to play with the crowd afterwards to be single? I mean, we were 10 times
well,
that, like
that. That was awesome.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
I mean, it takes a lot of guts to do what he did to the crowd after the match.
But
and say,
isn't
you know,
that's what we did? And nowadays, these boys get criticized.
Leave me
for
out
it.
Of it. Leave me what out of it.
What about Ivan? Because he was better behaved than us, except for Mats. He was certainly the second best behaved.
You know, luckily for me, you and Jimmy were around, so I looked really good.
that's a good point.
That's a point. Now, Kyrgios, look at Kyrgios. They're begging. You know, they want him around because he brings something to the table. People want to see him. Yeah. Now, the only part that any of us have a problem with, I assume, forget the rules. I would have no linesmen on the court at all. I would have the players call their own lines if you want to change a rule to make the sport interesting again with the challenge system.
Like it.
But Kyrgios doesn't try half the time.
Yeah, well, that's the problem.
That's the problem. Yeah. We all want just people that go out and give. Medvedev, he's going out there giving it the effort. That's why we like it. In addition to that, you see some personality.
A question for you, Ivan. How long or when do you think that the fans turned in your favor here at in New York? Because clearly in the beginning, when you played Jimmy and John, for obvious reasons, they were more rooting for him. But you made eight finals in a row?
Yeah.
Seven.
Eight. Yeah.
So at some point, the fans gave you the respect you deserve, just like somebody like Daniil Medvedev is sort of experiencing. When did you
feel? I never thought about it.
You never thought about it, so you didn't really care at all.
You just go and try to win.
Okay.
Just like you were saying before, you go and try to win. If they're for you, you try to win so you make them happy. And if they're against you, you try to win because you want to win.
That's
because
it.
For so long they were not on your side,
right.
You just took it for granted.
You know, you come into a country where the top two guys are home guys. On top of that, John is from New York. You can't expect the fans to be for you.
Well, was it even a situation where that motivated you more, a bit like we have today with Medvedev?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, it's like...
You needed more motivation than trying to kick his butt?
Well, look at it this way. If you, let's say, you're in the semis, you're in the finals already, and the other two guys are playing. There is John and somebody who is ranked 15.
Right.
Well, I know I'm going to beat that guy ranked 15, right? Yeah. So I kind of want him to win, knowing it's probably not going to happen. But if you beat John in the finals, it means that much more because he's number one or number two in the world with you, and it means that much more.
And he's a New Yorker. Yeah.
Yeah.
How did you deal with that, John? Because I'm sure you must have had situations where you are about to walk on a court, full stadium, and you don't quite know, ooh, are they going to root for me or against me? Or
I think it was clear when he played Davis Cup in Argentina that they're going to be against him.
Yeah, I think that I loved energy, whether it was good or bad, preferred it good, but I did seem to dwell on the people that were beginning on me, which I found infuriating, just to like try to bring your level down. I mean, I don't care if people rooted against me, as long as it, like if Ivan hit a great shot, you're like, too good, you're pissed, you lost a point, but you can accept that and respect it, but you can't, you know, double fault. And then all of a sudden this huge round of applause comes my way. So I always had a difficult time for some reason where I was born, which was Germany. They didn't seem to understand me too well there, Boris. I don't know why.
Do you
have any explanation?
Fast enough.
Maybe that was
that
it.
That was a V-Spot in all places,
a V-Spot,
right?
And my father was in the Air Force. And, you know,
close to my home in Heidelberg. We should have been brothers. I mean, a bit older, but yeah.
Yeah, so
it's not too late.
Maybe too late. It may be too late now.
That's a tough team on Baltics.
Well, Germany used to play Davis Cup on Baltics.
Oh, no, I played him a couple of times in Germany on Baltics. And for you, in terms of the crowd, because you used the crowd in your advantage.
I tried.
Wherever? Was there a place where they actually disliked you?
It was difficult here.
Really? Why?
Well, because the first couple of years it was difficult for me to feel comfortable here, to understand the New York state of mind, understand the fascination of the night matches, you know, the fascination of supporting for an underdog. You know, ever since 17 I was never the underdog, so not, you know, why don't you respect my performances and like the other guy that's not as good as me? So it took me a while for me to feel comfortable in New York.
When did you decide, Ivan, that you were going to go to Australia like a month early and, you know, decide to make that an important part of your schedule? Because when we came up, Australia wasn't considered at the same level as the other majors. And I think you, as much as anyone else, changed the thought process of like, hey, you know, you win this, it's the same as you win Wimbledon and the U.S. Open.
Well, it's not quite the same, but in the total, it counts the same.
Yeah, but, well, that's what I mean, yeah.
I don't know, I had a lot of respect for all the Grand Slams, a lot of respect for Australian tennis, even though Tony Roach wasn't coaching me then yet. And I gained even more respect after he started coaching me. And we were talking about, I don't know, was it with you or with someone else? No, someone else. Best day of my tennis career was in 1990. I decided not to play the French. And from Key Biscayne, week later, I went to Australia. And I spent 6 weeks in Australia practicing on grass. And my coach Tony Roach says to me one day, you know, you need to play some matches. I go, yeah, of course I do, but how we do it? I get a couple friends. They put up temporary stands. Saturday I come there. There is 2,000 local people watching. And who shows up? Ken Rosewall. Wow. So I play a pro set with Ken Rosewall. Then I play a pro set with John Newcomb. And then I play another pro set with Tony Roach. Mm-hmm. and having the respect for the Australian tennis and Harry Hopman, who you knew, mm-hmm. and the tennis school and so on and so on. That's one of the nicest memories I have from tennis.
How did you do at Wimbledon that year?
I lost in the semis to Stefan. I played. That's the year I beat you at Queens, both of you.
And you had a different record.
I had a little bigger racket.
So there you go. So there you go.
Actually, there is a funny part to that one. That I
funny for one of us.
Both of them on grass the same week.
Same week, back to back. I mean, it
was one for us, baseliners.
It was bad. I'm playing John. I beat him 6-2, 6-4. And somewhere in the second set.
On grass
at Queens. Somewhere in the second set, second serve to my backhand on the ad court, I hit it hard down the line, come in and put a volley away. And John just started laughing.
Well, I'm not laughing now.
Well, you should be. It was
funny. Yeah, I guess it was a while ago, so I can maybe I can laugh about it.
That's got to feel good, eh? Beating them on grass.
That was the best I played. I got that idea, actually, from the year before, where I lost to Michael Chang early at the French.
Yes.
And we had only 2 weeks between French and Wimbledon. And I lost to Boris in the semis that year. Yeah. But because of that extra week, that was the best. Those 2 years were the best grass court tennis I played because of that extra week. So Rochi and I thought about it and we said, let's go and skip the entire clay court season and start practicing on grass. And I came to Australia for 6 weeks and we worked really hard and it paid off at Queens. Unfortunately, Stefan played an unbelievable match against me in the semis of Wimbledon. But
is that the kicker on your backhand? Is that
he did everything well that day. He beat you in the finals that year.
He was rough.
In five sets, I remember now. Five sets, I think.
Three sets, five sets, it's still still
doesn't
over.
Really
it doesn't
matter.
Really matter.
Doesn't
it
really matter.
Three,
to me.
Three sets, Boris, three sets is actually a lot better because it's over faster.
No, but
it's not that
five
painful.
Five sets in 1990, yes. I was a break up in the fifth set even.
I wouldn't know.
So far, this conversation was
what
good.
Happened then? No, I'm kidding.
Yeah. We're going to let you guys, have things to do, but we're going to have one more question. Boris, there's a very, very famous situation here. This is the story that I've heard, that two genius agents of two great players in the late 70s, early 80s thought it'd be a really good idea if Mr. Left-Handed from Douglaston, New York, traveled in the same car as this Czechoslovakian player from Ostrava, and so they got to get to know one another. Do you guys remember that trip?
I remember it.
Okay. Did you find something out? Did you get to know one another? I mean,
no,
did you become friends after
that? That was a little different. We were stuck somewhere, going somewhere.
We were in like Luxembourg or something.
Luxembourg going to Antwerp. Yeah. And I had a car and John had no way of getting there.
Okay.
And my coach at that time was Wojtek Fibak. And he said, hey, you know, can you take John with you? And I said, sure, if he doesn't mind me driving my own way.
110 miles an hour, it's fine.
And so my father was in the car and John was in the back, and my goal was actually to drive so fast that John doesn't talk. It worked
really.
Well, Wojtek and I had a mutual we both loved art, so we did have that in common. So but Yvonne wasn't a big art guy, but he was a big politics guy, so we had a very nice discussion about politics way back at that point. Now, we should consider, Yvonne, I don't know if you got it in you. We should maybe, I know this is crazy me even to say this. We should think about taking not quite as long as that. That was like three and a half hours, but maybe now we can catch up on our political views and go play a little golf. And maybe we can ask Mats to come along as well. What do you think?
Well, are you a good caddy? I get Mats and you get Boris. However, Boris, the way he walks, you may get slow play penalty. Huh?
We'll let him on the caddy.
At the moment, I'd rather take the cart then.
But when you play golf, you're supposed to focus on golf, nothing else.
Well, we'll just talk about politics on the way, and then we'll get there and we'll focus on golf, okay?
I'm up for the golf. I want to improve my record against you.
Your record's 1-0.
It's 0-0 in golf, isn't it?
Didn't we go on in the Greenbrier once? We played like 9 holes in there was that event in Greenbrier.
I remember playing.
I think I was 4 up after 6, and then you said you were a 1 handicap. I was like, who the hell is this guy's a 1 handicap? Give me a break.
I don't remember playing with you, but that's all right.
Of course you don't, because I kicked
you
your ass.
You don't remember losses. That. That's all we got. Yeah. Guys, thank you so much. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having us.
Hope you guys enjoyed it.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.